The Football Kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
You are very welcome along to a festive edition of the Football Kickoff here on OTB Sports with Sky, where we look forward to five of the big fixtures on TV across the weekend, and we'll be primarily looking at St. Stephen's Day and next Monday, which is a festival of football across BT Sports, Sky Sports and Premier Sports. To look ahead to those games, delighted to say we've got Shane Hannan from OTB Sports and also former Republic of Ireland striker Simon Cox. Simon, can I ask you how you used to feel about playing around this time of year? We're talking to Kenny Cunningham earlier. He said he relished the games coming thick and fast around the Christmas period. He didn't mind going out and training on Christmas Day. What was your experience of festive football back when you were playing?
Yeah, I loved it. Actually loved it. Similar to Kenny, you know, going out on Christmas morning wasn't too much of an issue. I didn't have kids back then, so getting up and going wasn't too much of an issue. Actually, I think for the lads who have kids, actually like the break, because you get all of the carnage in the morning at probably 5, 6 a.m. and then have a little bit of a break before getting your food in when you get back.
Someone else has to worry about the batteries not being included in the toys while you're away getting the training in ahead of the game on St. Stephen's Day. And I always find like there's a great atmosphere around games this time of year too. You know, hopefully, touch wood, stadiums will be able to stay full in the Premier League for the next while. You know, there's all that speculation about grounds maybe going behind closed doors again. But like, people seem to really relish going out to watch a football game over the next week or so. You know, all teams are going to have three games between Sunday and over the 10-day period. And I think after the Christmas break, people love getting out to a ground and watching a game around this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a big period for a lot of teams where, you know, you can pick up points and pick up league positions. So if you can get a good set of results through this period, it might set you up for a decent January, plus obviously the running for the end of the season.
Yeah, like traditionally you don't want to end up bottom of the league, because typically most seasons you go down if you're bottom at the halfway point. And in Man City's case, they are going to be the Christmas number one after their win last week, but they still have Liverpool very much on their coattails going into this weekend. Both teams are going to be talking about. But in our flash poll, which are running on Off the Ball Twitter currently, we're looking at who could be a better signing for a top six team. Likely to be next summer as opposed to Christmas shopping. We're not sure how much business will be done in January, but we Celtic fans hold back on this one. He scored 16 goals for the Hoops this year. We're looking at Furuhashi against Rafinha. Rafinha is being heavily linked with Leeds. So these two players, Shane Hannan, have been bigged up by our pundits over the last few days. So Pat Nevin was talking about how impressed he's been with Furuhashi on the back of Celtic's win in the League Cup final in Scotland last week. And we're talking to Kenny Cunningham earlier about Liverpool taking on Leeds this Sunday. And he was saying that Rafinha will be a perfect signing for Liverpool, particularly if Leeds end up in relegation trouble at the end of this season. So far, we're looking at 72% going for Rafinha as a better signing for a top six team, and Furuhashi is getting 27%. I know when Pat Nevin spoke earlier this week, Shane, a lot of Celtic fans were saying he's only in the door at Celtic. He doesn't need to move to England. But he has been very impressive so far this season.
Yeah, for sure, Will. And I'm going to go against the poll in this one somewhat. I think Rafinha is a more likely signing for a top six team without a shadow of a doubt. And especially if Leeds go down, there is no shadow of a doubt that Rafinha is going to leave. He needs to play top-tier football, a player of his calibre. But for me, Kyogo Furuhashi, I mean, what he's done at Celtic so far. And it's a little bit like Ange Postecoglou himself, that he kind of came into the club. Nobody really knew who he was, what his background was. And he's been an absolute revelation. Kyogo has just been incredible. Like his stats, just looking at his stats here since he's joined the club, 25 appearances, 16 goals, 5 assists. Some people query the quality of the football up in Scotland, but you can't take that away from him. I mean, you can only beat the teams and the players in front of you, to be fair to him. And then those two goals against Hibs at the weekend in the cup final. There were queries over his fitness heading into the cup final and the fact that he goes and does that, including the wonderful lobbed goal as well. Just kind of puts the sheen on what he can do this side of Christmas. And I know he's a big hit in Japan, and he's finally making a name for himself over here. Like, Rafinha is obviously had an excellent season for Leeds, albeit standing out in a pretty crappy Leeds team this season. I know they've been a bit unlucky with injuries and that sort of thing as well, with Patrick Bamford, one of the notable absentees of late. But Rafinha is an excellent footballer, don't get me wrong, and Premier League calibre. But I'm going to go against the poll, Will. I think Kyogo could do a very, very good job for a top six team in the Premier League. Now, Rafinha will probably be the more likely of the two to sign for a top six team, but No, I'm all aboard the Kyogo bandwagon.
Shane Hahn's going for the late bloomer. Simon, when it comes to Rafinha, last couple of seasons in the Premier League, he's been excellent for Leeds. As Shane mentioned, this season's been a bit more difficult because they've been missing some of their key players for a large section of the season, like Bamford, like Phillips. But Rafinha has still impressed, coming over from the right-hand side, sometimes playing more in a number 10 position. We were talking to Lauro and to Kenny Cunningham earlier today, and they think that if Liverpool are looking to try and strengthen their front three, Rafinha, as a proven player in the Premier League, could be an excellent signing for Liverpool particularly.
Yeah, listen, absolutely. He's now undoubtedly shone this year, as you mentioned, Will, with the absentees that they've had. But my question would be that he would be used to playing week in, week out, and then obviously he then goes to a top six side, if it's Liverpool, if it's anybody else, would he be happy with, you know, potentially not playing week in, week out? I mean, he'll have to make that decision himself. It's very hard to displace Salah, Mane and Jota at the minute, you know, between him and Firmino. Mm-hmm. So where does Rafinha really fit in, apart from, you know, substitute appearances and possibly cup games?
As a forward player, Simon, who had to, you know, play in versatile roles in the front line during your career, have you been impressed by what Jota has brought to Liverpool? Because ostensibly he was brought in to try and cover for the two main players in Mane and Salah, because he can play on either side. But he's played a lot of football at number nine this year because of Firmino's hamstrings being an issue. And like, he scored a great striker's header at Spurs last weekend in the 2-2 draw. And he offers an awful lot for Liverpool through that number nine position. He's turned out to be a very astute signing by Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, I think, and he's got his best goal return as well so far to date. So, which is great. And to be honest, I think he's probably over-impressed a lot of more people because of you know, how many games he's played. And listen, I think when you're in that side of Liverpool, and where Firmino wasn't getting as many goals as possibly he should have done, he was probably the unsung hero in the front three, and he brings a lot to Liverpool's attacking prowess. But ultimately, Jota's come in and he's got so many goals. His goals to game ratio is ridiculous, and he's, you know, he's been a great signing for Liverpool.
It is the season of giving, Shane Hannon, as our resident Manchester United fan here. It'll be next summer before Erling Haaland goes somewhere, because his release clause comes down to 75 million this summer and he becomes affordable for Europe's top clubs, even in a depressed market with COVID-19. Is he the dream signing for Manchester United, even if it means that maybe might push Cristiano Ronaldo onto the bench? Would that be the perfect signing for United if they can get him?
Oh, I mean, it is the dream signing for any club in the world right now, isn't it, really? He's the marquee name. His goals record, and again, like, I don't want to diss the Bundesliga in any way, shape or form. He scores a lot of goals in a league that's perhaps not at the same level as England or Spain or Italy, but he's still an incredible player, scores plenty of goals at international level for Norway as well. Has that relationship with Ralf Rangnick as well. I know, well, by the sound of things, Samuel Luckhurst reporting in the Manchester Evening News yesterday that Rangnick has already spoken to Haaland's father, Alf. Like, would he move to United? Is that an option for him? Possibly. It fits. It makes sense. United have the money. He would fit into the team. Yes, he would probably kind of shepherd Cristiano Ronaldo towards the bench. But Ronaldo was always going to be a fairly short-term solution for a couple of years, you would have imagined. Anyway, Haaland is more of a long-term thing. There's going to be competition for his signature. There's no question about it. It's just a matter of what offer United can put on the table. He's not going to go for small money. His wages will be absolutely astronomical. But look, his contract's going to be up with Dortmund. He will be heading somewhere. If United have any brains, and the board have any brains, they will sanction it, because we know that the European Super League thing left a bit of a sour taste in the mouth of fans. They kind of appeased that a little bit with the signing of Ronaldo and stopping Manchester City from getting his signature. But Haaland would just tip it over the edge, because Haaland is more of a long-term thing, and he just looks born to play in the Premier League as well. He's got the strength, he's got the physicality, a bit like Simon used to play, holding the ball up, creating chances, scoring plenty of goals. And look, I can see him already, Will, walking out of that tunnel beside the Stretford End to the United fans' applause.
Possibly wearing a Man City jersey like he was.
maybe. But yeah, he would be an incredible signing for sure.
At times it's becoming farcical, and you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
All right, the football kickoff is with Sky. All the football you want in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sport, particularly among this very busy time of the season. Let's have a look forward to the fixtures which are coming up over the weekend then. Starting with Sunday, St. Stephen's Day, or the Boxing Day schedule, as they would say in the UK. It all kicks off with Liverpool against Leeds, BT Sports, 12:30 on Sunday afternoon. Simon, when you look at this game, Leeds are in poor form. They've got players who are missing. Took a heavy defeat last week against Arsenal at home at Elland Road in the only game that was on Saturday. Liverpool look in good form, even with a few players out themselves. And I remember watching this reverse fixture a few months ago, and Liverpool ripped them to shreds when Leeds played up high against them. It's hard to see Marcelo Bielsa's side take something away from Anfield on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't see it. And obviously, Boyd, after the result last night, Liverpool, you know, even with a changed side, coming back from, you know, three goals and getting the win in on penalties, I still feel Liverpool have got way too much in the tank for Leeds. As you said, you know, two heavy defeats, Arsenal and City, 11 goals conceded. It doesn't read really well for Leeds. I actually think possibly Leeds players might want a break from Bielsa mentally. You know, the whole pressing all over the pitch is probably a little bit tired now. I just see Liverpool steamrolling this game, no problem.
Shane Hannan, it's easier for Leeds players to have energy when they're going well. It's far more difficult when you're slipping towards the bottom of the table and you're conceding 11 goals in two games against two of the heavy hitters in the Premier League. This was always going to be a difficult run of fixtures for them, with some of the top teams coming week after week. Then you take their absences, you take that Bielsa is always going to be wedded to his style of football. At what point do Leeds fans start to get concerned, Shane?
Yeah, like, I know it's the first time in Bielsa's, what, 3.5 years in charge that they've lost three in the spin, albeit against, you know, three of the, I guess, big six, Chelsea, City and Arsenal. And then to have Liverpool coming off the back of that isn't exactly ideal for Bielsa. Like, I'm kind of thinking along similar lines to Simon there. Like, I was reading interesting quotes from Paul Merson, and I wouldn't be the biggest fan of Paul Merson's stuff, but he was saying that his insistence at playing the same way is reminding him of Arsene Wenger's latter years at Arsenal. And there is a little bit of that. You don't want it to turn sour and for Bielsa to kind of overstay his welcome, ruin the good work that he's done. Quite likely, unless thing results really start continuing downhill, that Bielsa will stay in charge to the end of the season, I would have thought. I think they'll give him that the credit for the stuff he's already got in the bank with them. He's done plenty of good things with that club, but he's been unlucky as well. Like Diego Llorente, hopefully will be back for them for this game at the weekend. I know as well Liverpool have the likes of Fabinho and Van Dijk. They're hoping back from their COVID rests. It's hard to see it. Like, I agree with Simon. I think that the attitude of Leeds players at this stage, especially around a festive period when you've so many games one after the other, this pressing game is just too much. I know they're Premier League footballers. People might argue, but they're of course super, super fit. It doesn't really matter how much they have to run in a game, but it does. If you're playing a certain type of pressing football, you have to be abnormally fit, even by a footballer's standards. I just can't see it. Like, Jurgen Klopp kind of lost the head a little bit to Paul Tierney, the referee, last weekend, and that kind of showed a certain crack maybe in his armour, but I would say,
Shane, understandably so. Like, if any manager watches Harry Kane go in two-footed on Robertson and not get a red card, I'm having a go at the officials too.
Yeah, it just felt a bit personal what he was saying, that I don't have any issues with any officials except you. You don't want to see it, you don't want to hear it, you don't want to hear excuses from a manager, and Klopp kind of comes out with those excuses, especially after draws for some reason. I do understand that the quality of officiating probably hasn't been fantastic in the Premier League this whole season. And yes, Liverpool have borne the brunt of some of those poor decisions, but you just don't want to see it. I'm a big fan of Jurgen Klopp, a lot of people are, but it's the meeting of two great minds, Klopp and Bielsa, this weekend. But at the moment, really they're in two very, very different headspaces, it has to be said.
Yeah, they're working with two very different squads as well. Liverpool, we spoke about, they beat Leicester in the EFL Cup quarterfinals last evening. Most remarkable game. Looked like Leicester had that game won right up to 95 minutes gone. Liverpool get an equaliser. Eventually, Quivín Kelleher makes himself a hero in the penalty shootout, and Liverpool advance to the semi-finals against Arsenal next month. It's a busy period for Liverpool with all those games. Leicester have got one less game to worry about, at least. Going to Man City, the Premier League leaders on Sunday. Simon, do you give them a chance of taking something away from City? Like, City have dropped some silly points. We think back to Crystal Palace winning at the Etihad earlier this season, but they've been in pretty intimidating form even in recent weeks, moving to the top of the table for Christmas.
Yeah, and even without a number nine, which is, I think, scary. I still think they need a number nine, but you can tell that they're in scintillating form. Obviously, in the driving seat now, top at Christmas, it means that they've obviously gone. They've gone a great form and a great run, scoring so many goals and literally just steamrolling teams. But Leicester, I don't know. I think Leicester are one of these teams where you obviously, like, you look at last night. You know, they were very good last night, albeit against a changed Liverpool team. But I just sort of see. They're going to have to do everything right, and City are going to have to have a little bit of an off day.
Mm. The thing about Leicester as well is that it was some promising points during the season, and then their fans have turned a little bit given some of the results, and like they've had a few disappointments now in a row in recent weeks, like going out of the English League Cup last night where they were in such a good position to qualify. They're gone down to the Conference League. I know Brendan Rodgers said he doesn't even know what the Conference League is after they were knocked out of the Europa League, but they should have been in a good position to qualify from that group. They've taken a few boos from their fans at halftime in recent games as well. Despite the fact that their season has been steady so far, Simon, it is kind of dropped off a little bit for Leicester in recent weeks.
Yeah, well, I think it's a tough run of fixtures. They obviously had Liverpool last night, they've got City, then they've got Liverpool again. Mm. So, you know, this is a tough period for Leicester. Come through this and then all of a sudden, I guess the fixtures start to ease up for them. But it's just a matter of time. Obviously, recent weeks, with obviously even the Brendan Rodgers being linked with the United thing, all of that sort of distraction maybe was playing a bit of a part. Then you've got Maddison obviously now coming back into a bit of form, scored a wonderful goal last night. January will be interesting for them to see how they get on. If they're able to keep Youri Tielemans, I think that's a big thing for them. I like Daka. I think he's a long-term replacement for Vardy, although Vardy still, you know, looks like he's still got a few years left. But that seems to be the sort of general consensus around the football club. He looks like he's got the pace. He obviously can score the goals as well. So I just sort of see this being a little bit of a sticky period for Leicester. Like I say, the three games of two Liverpool and one City, come through that and they should be fine.
Yeah, that is our live game on Off the Ball this coming Sunday as well. Vinnie Perth will be joining Nathan Murphy on commentary on that one. You can sit down and watch Sky Sports 5:30 on Sunday evening. Aston Villa against Chelsea. Shane Hannan, I'll give you a first shout on this. Chelsea will take on Tottenham in the League Cup semi-finals. That's going to be intriguing to see Conte up against Chelsea. But Chelsea's league form has been very indifferent in recent weeks. You know, 3 wins and 8. It's seen them slip off a little bit in the Gulf Stream of Man City, who've gone to the top of the table. Chelsea need a good festive period to get themselves back in the Premier League title race, Shane.
They do, yeah. Like, the form hasn't been good, as you mentioned. And like, yeah, I think back to Chelsea beating Villa 3-0 in the Premier League back in September in the reverse fixture. You just can't see the same sort of result this time around. And now, albeit there's COVID issues here, a player for both of these teams. But like, Villa have only lost twice in 6 games, Liverpool and City being those defeats since Gerrard took over from Dean Smith. Like, they're up to 10th in the Premier League. Things look bad for them for quite some time. But since Gerrard took over, they're a different animal. And the form of Chelsea is in contrast, not very good. Like, I know Thomas Tuchel probably wanted that game against Wolves last week, the 0-0 draw, that game to be postponed for COVID reasons. You had plenty of players out. The game went ahead. You have to still fulfil these fixtures when the Premier League say so. Like, for me, I enjoyed Stephen Gerrard's comments on the COVID yesterday. I don't know if you saw on Twitter, the football cliches page. posting Gerrard's quote saying we're going to need some testing results to go our way, which was, for me, one of the best football cliches we've had. He's turned COVID-19 antigen test into a cliche. But no, I don't know. Like, Chelsea are so strange. Like, for a while there, we all had them as the runaway potential title winners the early part of the season. I mean, what's happened to them now? And bear in mind as well, this week they'll have had this midweek game against Brentford last night in the Carabao Cup, which really at this time of year, in this festive period, when you have so many fixtures stacked against each other, for Villa to have had that break where Chelsea didn't is a huge thing. And that's especially huge when you've had COVID issues in both camps. So, I mean, they're only 6 points off the European places, Aston Villa, all of a sudden, and in form, four of their six games won since Gerrard took charge. So this one could go either way. It could be another little draw for Chelsea, I think. A sneaky little draw for Villa because of how well their form has been.
Simon, where are you on Chelsea at the moment then?
I just sort of see, obviously, as Shane said, like, big stumble for them right now, losing pace with the top two. I think it's been a tough one because they've had the COVID issues, but then so has everybody. You can't keep blaming that. Everybody's going through the exact same thing. They have got strength in depth, no doubt. I think Lukaku's been a little bit of a disappointment with the way that he hasn't sort of fired up his goal-scoring form that he had at Inter Milan last year, and obviously he's had injury issues and stuff like that. So it's, I think Thomas Tuchel, love him as a coach. I think he's a great coach, plays football the right way, got them playing some really good stuff early on, but just now there's cracks starting to creep in, and it's not looking as rosy as it once was.
Well, the late fare, if you don't want to sit down and watch the soaps on Sunday night, is Brighton against Brentford. It's the Seagulls against the Bees, 8 p.m. on Sky Sports for that game on the south coast in England. And Shane, who's your fancy in Brighton against Brentford then?
Yeah, like, again, don't want to sound like a broken record, but Brentford having this midweek game at this time of year against Chelsea last night doesn't help them. I know Graham Potter, speaking in this press conference yesterday, kind of pointed to the fact that he still has a couple of players out with COVID issues. But as Simon said, every club is having to deal with that at the minute. Joel Veltman, I know, is being monitored due to fatigue. I think that's going to be an issue for a lot of players in the coming couple of weeks. But he did say yesterday, Graham Potter, Danny Welbeck, Gross and Neil Mopé all available for this game, which is a huge, huge boost for Brighton, especially the Neil Mopé one. And Danny Welbeck hasn't played, I think, since September or so. Brighton beat them back in September. That was one of four wins in the opening five games. But since then, of course, they've had a huge dip. You know, they've since gone 11 Premier League games without a win. A lot of draws. So, Graham Potter was at pains to point that out yesterday, that, look, they've still drawn 8 times this season. So even managed to pick up 8 points in a period where they just could not win for love nor money. You think about the game being postponed against Manchester United last weekend. Is it a good thing or a bad thing for a team? You want to have football this time of year, but then again, they have the break, which is good. Like, Thomas Frank says his Brentford team are in a good place. I know he wanted the last round of Premier League games suspended. So that'll just tell you where a lot of Premier League managers' headspaces are at the minute. But I mean, I think it's going to be quite a similar game to the Brighton-Brentford game back in September. I know it sounds strange to say because Brighton just haven't been in the right form, but that midweek game for Brentford, and they had to put out a strong team because, of course, they want a decent cup run. That could have an impact. And I think Brighton could actually get a result for this in this game against the run of form.
Yeah, because Simon, when you talk about important times in the season, it very much is for both Brentford and Brighton. Since that really good early start to the season, Brighton have only accumulated 8 more points to get to 20. Brentford kick off on the same amount of points, albeit both teams have games in hand because their matches were called off last weekend compared to some of the teams around them in the table. But if this almost feels a little bit like a 6-pointer and something that could be crucial to kickstart their Christmas period, whoever wins that late kickoff on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, Both teams. I mean, Brentford hadn't played in the Premier League since the 10th of December. I mean, that's a long way. Obviously, trying to get the cobwebs out of them last night, albeit, you know, with a defeat. But majority of their starting 11, I guess, will play. Who played last night will play again this weekend. So, yeah, I think it is. It's not a 6-pointer, but it kind of feels like one. I think Brentford have got to be really happy with the way they've taken to the Premier League this year. You know, some big scouts, obviously, with the draw in Liverpool, beating Arsenal on the opening night as well. So, you know, they've done really well so far. So you can't knock them what they've done. And if they come through this, it's it looks really good for them. It just, I think, again, January is going to be interesting because they're not a team who go out and spend loads of money. So it will be interesting to see how they go about their business in January and who they bring in.
Well, Shane, what about the business that might be done by Newcastle and might be required from them next month? They play on Monday against Manchester United live on Sky Sports. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff on the 27th of December on Monday evening. And look, Newcastle, they really haven't got going so far under Eddie Howe. They've taken quite a few defeats in recent weeks. They're in a real fight to stay in the Premier League for next season. But for Newcastle fans, Shane, hope will spring eternal that perhaps they can get something from this game, and then some new recruits will come in from the week after that.
Yeah, I think Newcastle fans are absolutely desperately waiting for this January transfer window to open. And like, you're hearing rumours in the last couple of days that Eddie Howe has his sights set on 3 or 4 targets. You're going to hear these rumours anyway for the next couple of weeks. But Moussa Dembele, one of the names being mentioned at Lyon. I know he was on loan at Atletico Madrid last season. Fairly injury-affected campaign for him, but he would be excellent. He's someone who kind of fits the bill alongside Callum Wilson up front, Luca Dean, Kieran Trippier, other names being mentioned as well. So they're going to have a busy next month or so in the transfer window for sure. But yeah, the results, like, similar to Leicester, they've lost the last few, but really you have to look at the calibre of opposition they had. So they've lost to Man City, Liverpool and Leicester. The worrying thing for Eddie Howe and Newcastle is the amount of goals they've conceded. They've conceded 11 goals and scored just once in that period. Look, they've been unlucky with a few officiating decisions. We mentioned that the referees and the officials recently there as well. And Eddie Howe won't be quite happy. But 10 points and a goal difference of minus 23 in the table, just looking at it here, that's not good. Like, they're not big defeats, but they'll cost them. Like, the failing to beat Norwich as well, who are relegation rivals at home, is not good enough. 3-3 draw at Brentford, not a great result either. Although Eddie Howe, of course, had COVID himself and was isolating for that game, so wasn't there. It's hard to know. Ian Dowie was speaking during the week and I saw him talking about the fact that he'd spoken to a couple of Newcastle players and they seem more happy with the situation at the club now with Eddie Howe in charge compared to how it was under Steve Bruce, anecdotally. But, I mean, this is not what the Saudi Arabia's public investment fund will have wanted, Will. They don't want to all of a sudden see themselves in the Championship next season and having to claw back from there. Like, relegation will be an absolute disaster for Newcastle at this stage, considering the money that's being pumped in. But you would imagine enough business done in January and they'll save their tails, you would have thought.
Manchester United, Simon, where are you with them under Ragnick so far?
Well, two league seasons in the last two games, so he's obviously gone in and straight away he's realised that you can't keep shipping goals, so he's gone in and shored that defence up, so that's good. Obviously, I didn't think they were great against against Norwich, but Ronaldo pops up with a goal and they win 1-0, they win the game, so it's good. I think he's got his backroom staff now in place, and seeing that they are about to appoint a new CEO as well. So I think behind the scenes, looks like they've got their structure or getting their structure back in place, which should then allow the on-field stuff to take care of itself. But, you know, just picking up on a couple of points that that Shane made about Newcastle, really. One, the goals against Colum, that's technically another point that Newcastle are going to have to try and make up. So no matter who they bring in January, they've got to look at that, and you're going against the Burnleys, the Norwiches of this world, and you're going to have to start looking at that as, right, well, we need an extra point to get out of this relegation zone, because it, you know, theoretically it could come down to goal difference for them. And the other thing was, yeah, okay, you're being linked with all these players, but really, if you're going to be looking at second bottom of the league at Christmas, are you really looking to go to Newcastle? Regardless of the money that you're throwing about, do you really want to be potentially playing in the Championship next season? Or if you bring them in, are they going to have like ridiculous release clauses if you go down that they stay for 6 months and ask them away again? So it's an interesting time for Newcastle, I think, for who they bring in in January.
Yeah, RB wants someone who's ready for a relegation scrap as opposed to Aubameyang or a Philippe Coutinho coming in on big wages potentially. The football kickoff is with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sport across the season and over this very important part of the season too. Let's take a look then at our five-a-side team, which the viewers and listeners have been picking. The options that we gave for this week, you'll see the final team up on screen now. Alisson against Meslier, that was an easy one for Alisson. Surely the Liverpool goalkeeper, one of the best in the world, winning that one. Johnny Evans not having any success against Ruben Diaz, last year's player of the year, who has been picked as our defender on this five-a-side team. Jorginho, who was in the top three of the Ballon d'Or, has got in ahead of Aston Villa's McGinn to be our midfielder. Mbembu comes in as one of our forwards, and we are going to have Jadon Sancho providing a bit of width over on the right-hand side. He's been picked ahead of the Newcastle striker Callum Wilson. All of these top five were picked as clashes with the games that are taking place this weekend. A couple of your comments before I ask the guys about the team there. I would see Rafinha more suited to either City or Liverpool's style of play. I'm not convinced that either will necessarily need him. And also Robert Kavanagh on YouTube as well. Furuhashi would be a better signing for a top side than a Rafinha for a top side. Shane is deluded, is the response to that. So Shane Hannan, you're not going to win any fans on this, and Celtic supporters are going to be out to get you. I saw it after Pat Nevin made the claim during the week that Furuhashi's done enough in Scotland to prove that he's ready for the move to England, and straight away they were on to have a go at Pat Nevin. So no great surprise in that five-a-side team. Lads, Shane, I think Alisson was always going to win against Meslier, the Leeds goalkeeper headed this weekend. No surprise with Diaz. Jorginho, given that he plays for Chelsea. The difficult one, Simon, might have been picking between March and Mbembu as one of the forwards. That was probably one of the more 50-50 polls that we had here.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't... I think I voted for... however you say his name, Mbembu, whatever his name is. But just purely and simply, I think he's... pace and power, as much as you need pace and power in a five-a-side team. Similar to the Jadon Sancho one, I think it's more, do you need width in a five-a-side team as well? So, it's fun and they were my two picks, really.
It's all about skills and tricks in five-a-side. That's what you're getting with Jadon Sancho. Quick reminder of the fixtures, which are live then across the Sky Sports package this weekend. Liverpool against Leeds, BT Sport, 12:30 on Sunday. Man City against Leicester is a 3 p.m. kickoff on Premier Sports. Aston Villa versus Chelsea, 5:30, Sky Sports. And you've got Brighton against Brentford, also on St. Stephen's Day, which is an 8 p.m. kickoff on Sky Sports. Monday then, back on Sky Sports, 8 p.m. is Newcastle against Manchester United. A real feast of football over this festive period. My thanks to Shane Hannan and to Simon Cox for joining us on the Football Kickoff, and we'll be back next week.
The Football Kickoff
with Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.